When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com. Put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Right now, we want to say hello to Jingmei O'Connor. She is the new dinosaur curator at the Field Museum. Hey, Jingmei, how are you?
Hi, I'm wonderful. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Thank you so much for jumping on with us. You have an interesting backstory, and you are breaking all the notions of the nerdy scientist, aren't you?
Well, that's what they say.
Maybe that's not what you say, but that's what people are saying about you, because you've named a fossil after the lead singer of the band Bad Religion. You have tattoos, you're young, you've got an ear piercing, you're not what we expect from the paleontologists, at least for those of us who grew up watching Indiana Jones movies, I guess.
Well, Indiana Jones is an archaeologist, not a paleontologist, so you can't blame him on us. And also, little known fact, Greg Graffin, who I named the species after, has a master's also in paleontology. So if I think anybody is dispelling the notion that paleontologists are boring, it's definitely him.
Okay, but most of us don't know him, right?
That's true.
That's true. Well, you just took the job at the Field Museum. You're going to be the dinosaur curator. So what does that mean?
Well, actually, I'm the associate curator of fossil reptiles, so it's more than just dinosaurs. It also includes lots of other really cool extinct groups like mosasaurs, plesiosaurs, ichthyosaurs, lots of saurs. But my particular research does focus on one group of dinosaurs, birds. So, you know, if you're looking out the window, you can probably see a dinosaur right now. And, it entails a lot of different things, from going out into the field and collecting new fossil reptiles, probably dinosaurs, to bring back and grow our collections, but also just doing research. That's my primary duty, and that's also my favorite thing to do.
Explain that to me a little bit, because I read a little bit in the article. Tell us a little bit about birds being dinosaurs.
Yeah, so basically one group of dinosaurs evolved into birds. And so all birds are dinosaurs, but not all dinosaurs are birds. And birds are nested within the group called Theropoda. So that's the group that also includes, you know, Sue the T-Rex. But one group of theropods became very small. That was a prerequisite of evolving flight. And then these small group of dinosaurs actually evolved flight three times, maybe four times, five times. We're still trying to figure that out right now. But one of these lineages became birds, and they became a whole diversity of different birds in the Cretaceous, but then almost all of them were wiped out by the, you know, meteor and climate change and all these other things that happened at the end of the Cretaceous. But one of these lineages survived and then just explosively radiated into all the different groups of birds that we have alive today.
I know generally at some point in life, a lot of kids can name like every dinosaur imaginable. I was not one of those kids, so I apologize for my lack of knowledge in this area. But when you talk about birds as dinosaurs, in the dinosaur time, in that period, were there very large flying dinosaurs? Were there birds much bigger than anything we've ever seen today?
Not during the time of the dinosaurs. There were birds that have existed in the past that were bigger than the birds we have today. But the largest flying reptiles that ever lived were actually the pterosaurs. So the pterosaurs are, you know, these close relatives of dinosaurs. They're actually what we call their sister group. And they had these big membranous wings, and maybe they were bipedal. And some of these pterosaurs, in particular one named Quetzalcoatlus, was basically about the size of a Cessna, of a small plane. So that was the biggest flying reptile of all time. But most flying birds, especially during the age of the dinosaurs, they were pretty small. Like the biggest ones we have were like turkey size.
The size of a Cessna. That's huge.
Yeah, it is huge.
And how is that possible? Like, were they just incredibly thin boned and like, you know, carried very little? Like, do we know much about how they were able to be that large and flying on their own power?
Well, you know, with pterosaurs, they're so unlike anything that we have alive today that it's really difficult to understand anything about their biology, about their flight mechanics, that kind of thing. So people, you know, some people say that maybe they could only glide because they were so big, but we're really not sure. They definitely had a lot of similar features that we see in birds that we know do help them fly, like fusion of bones and also the thin wall bones, that kind of thing. But to be honest, pterosaurs are not not my particular area of research. So we'd have to go find a pterosaur expert, and then we can ask him all these questions.
That's okay. I just want to think about seeing, I'm here on the 18th floor windows overlooking the river, and I want to think about a bird like a Cessna flying by right now, and how I would just jump under the desk and probably wouldn't come out for about a week. We'd freak out if we saw that.
We would. But it's a pterosaur, not a bird. So it's a reptile, and it's a relative of dinosaurs, but it's not a dinosaur and it's not a bird. But yeah, the largest birds that we've ever had were bigger than an albatross, but still much smaller than a Cessna.
I like the Cessna one. That's the one that scares me. So I enjoy that very much. So
tell you can ride on its back, you know.
I mean, you theoretically could. I mean, I'm sure that you wouldn't, but you could. And all right, I'm not going to even ask. I'll do that all day long. You don't want to hear about that. So let's talk about this. Your new job at the field, you said research and adding to the collection. So will you spend a lot of time around the world on digs and things like that?
I will spend a lot of time around the world studying other fossils there, but if we are going to bring this fossils back to the field, then it probably has to be stuff that's, you know, found in our backyard here in America. So I do plan to, you know, go to places like Montana, which of course, you know, the Hell Creek Formation, which has produced some really amazing fossils like T-Rex, like Stan that was sold recently, but actually the sale of Stan has kind of put a little damper on our ability to do field work, because we go to people's land and we say, hey, can we go on your land and look around and look for fossils, and if we find anything, can we bring it back to the museum? But now the people know that instead of letting researchers like me take these fossils back to museums where they can be studied, they could actually instead sell them for millions of dollars. So I think this is going to make field work a little bit more difficult. But I also do collaborate with lots of teams around the world. I have friends that do field work with in Canada. I've been to South Africa and done field work. Of course, I've done a lot of field work in China as well. So I hope to continue these collaborations and maybe not bring the fossils back to the field, but still work on them.
And tell us a little bit about China, because I was reading that you have done a lot of work over there, because that's where the most fertile ground is for finding the bird fossils.
This is true, yeah. So I spent almost 11 years working in an institute in China, and it's a really amazing institute too, because the Field Museum is a fantastic museum, but we still only have a handful of paleontologists. But where I worked in Beijing, which is a place called the IVPP, which stands for the Institute of Vertebrate Paleontology and Paleoanthropology, and yes, I can say that in Chinese too. In an area of northern China, we have like you said, the most fertile ground for early Cretaceous birds, but also all these other flying dinosaurs that I was talking about. Almost all the other flying dinosaurs come from the same area in China, in Liaoning, from the same period of time. And so it's the best place if you want to study the dinosaur-bird transition, if you want to study how flight evolved in dinosaurs multiple times. So this is, of course, multiple research questions. And if you want to look at the diversity of all these birds in the Cretaceous, that's the place to go. So, yeah, I went to the source, you know, and I also have family there, so it wasn't so difficult for me. But I really loved my time there. The food was amazing. The Great Wall, I've been there so many times, but every time I go, it just blows my mind. And it was a really, really wonderful experience, really nice period of my life. But I'm also really excited about this new chapter in my life here in Chicago.
Well, we're very excited to have you on board. You know, any museum always could use an infusion of youth, and you are very energetic and very, you know, young and kind of, you know, inspiring a new generation of scientists to grow up. So I think it's going to be very exciting to have you here. Now, I've read also, Jingmei, that you DJ in your spare time, one of your passions. So, you know, the museums all love to have these great after-hours events. Will we look forward to seeing you DJ some sort of awesome after-hours event at the field when the world can return back to some sense of normalcy and we can do things like that?
So this is a popular misconception that I've tried again and again. Well, no, I am an iTunes DJ. So my version of DJing is I turn the crossfade on my iTunes to the max, which is like 12 seconds, and then I just, you know, play songs. And so the only events that I have DJed, well, I've DJed a couple parties, like in small bars in Beijing, but I, at the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology, which is an annual meeting of vertebrate paleontologists that happens, and there's an after-hours party at the end, and so I volunteer my services to DJ this party, and it's pretty much the only thing. But, you know, I've DJed it in Australia and in Berlin, and so people have been taking this to write stories saying, she says, you know, international professional DJ. And I'm like, no. Like, and I try to correct it. So I don't want people to think that I'm going around being like, oh yeah, I'm a DJ. You know, like, I'm really not. My little sister is a DJ. DJ Half and Half. You can listen to her stuff on SoundCloud and that kind of thing. But you know, it's just to make this after hours party a little bit more fun, because I'm a paleontologist like them. They know me. So people can come up to me, make their requests. So honestly, I only get to pick like the first 5 songs. And then after that, it's just people being like, we want to hear this. We want to hear that. And of course, there's a song called, by a group called, They Might Be Giants. And it's called I'm a Paleontologist. And so of course we have to play that like 5 times and everybody goes crazy each time. But yeah, it's a lot of fun and I really enjoy doing it.
See, I'm sorry, Jingmei. The story got so far ahead that now you just have to start practicing and just become you can't just be a scientist with a playlist. Now you got to get the turntables. You got to start working on that. Maybe some beatboxing. I don't know. We got to work on that.
Well, you know, I tried to have my little sister teach me how to use her equipment, but, you know, I always make the joke that I'm not very good with technology. Like, my joke is I can barely use my computer. So she taught me how, but honestly, it's difficult. It's an art. And, if you're going to do something, you have to do it well. And I honestly don't have the time to invest in that. But my little sister has also DJed the SVP After Hours Party a few times. So, when it's easy for her to get there, she does it and does a really good job. But otherwise, they just have to settle for me.
That's really cool. Well, we look forward to you or your sister DJing future events at the Field Museum. Jingmei O'Connor, how much time will you actually get to spend at the Field Museum? Because your work does take you around the world for the Field Museum and not. How much are we going to see of you in Chicago, do you think?
Well, I'm hoping that I'll spend, you know, at like probably 10 and a half, 11 months in the United States. And maybe 1 month of that will be spent out in the field. But the rest of the time, I'm fully dedicating myself to Chicago.
Excellent. Well, have you spent much time in Chicago in your life?
No. I mean, I came out for a very short conference a few years back, and then I came out for my interview. But other than that, like I said, I was like a total of like less than 1 week. But yeah, I'm loving it so far, or like truly, really loving it. And I'm really excited about exploring the city. I mean, COVID willing, of course.
Sure, of course. And you grew up in California, if I have that right, right?
Yeah, Pasadena, California.
And have you, you've been all over the world, so I imagine you've experienced winters before. This won't be that shocking to you, correct?
Yeah, actually, Beijing's weather is very similar to Chicago. And so, yeah, my first couple Beijing winters were not fun, but I have since then learned about layers and about the quality of your clothing actually does make a difference. And honestly, for a California girl, you know, I love snow, so I'm looking forward to that. Because Beijing winters are a little bit dry. We don't get that much of it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to live somewhere sustainably, and sustainability and being kind to the environment is really important to me, you have to deal with weather, you know. If you're living somewhere where it's hot all the time, like California, it's not a very sustainable place to live.
Well, the Norwegians say, we learned this earlier in the show, the Norwegians say there's no bad weather, just bad clothing. So as long as you do that right, you're going to have a beautiful view of the lake and a beautiful view of Chicago from your new offices at the Field Museum. So we're very excited to have you in town.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really excited to be here and really looking forward to sharing my passion with the Field Museum. You know, if people come visit the Field Museum, but also all of Chicago and anyone else who's willing to listen to me, you know, blab on about dinosaurs.
We absolutely will. Jingmei O'Connor is the new punk rock paleontologist, we shall say, at the Field Museum. Go visit her soon. Thank you so much for being on the phone with us. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN.